Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and I'm reading today from the words of John Newton. I think you probably know who John Newton was, the writer of Amazing Grace, but let me tell you a little more. He was the son of a shipmaster, was educated early in life by his mother, who taught him the scriptures, but he abandoned her teaching as a teenager. He joined the English Navy, 1743, was made a midshipman, and then deserted his post. He lived dissolutely, was recaptured, reduced in rank, and eventually became a servant to a slave trader. 1748, he was converted in a storm at sea. He studied for the ministry, was ordained at Olney at age 39. In 1767, William Cowper moved to Olney, and together they wrote the famous Olney Hymns, 280 of which were written by Newton. In 1780, Newton accepted the rectorship, became pastor of St. Mary Woolnoth in London, where he served for 27 years until his death. While there, he founded the Church Missionary Society of the Church of England. Quite a life, yes. Evidently, somewhere along the line, he had in his congregation some people that didn't know how to pray in public too well. You still run into these people today. Maybe you have them in your church. Thoughts on Public Prayer is the name of a little piece he put together. And I'm going to share that with you. He says, I account it a great mercy that at this time, when iniquity so generally abounds, there is a number, I hope a growing number, whose eyes affect their hearts, and who are stirred up to unite in prayer for the spreading of gospel knowledge and a blessing upon our sinful land. Meetings for social prayer are frequent in different parts of the kingdom and amongst various denominations of Christians. As the Lord has promised that when he prepares the heart to pray, he will graciously incline his ear to hear, who can tell but he may yet be entreated for us and avert the heavy and justly deserved judgments which seem to hang over us. It is much to be desired that our hearts might be so affected with a sense of divine things and so closely engaged when we are worshiping God that it might not be in the power of little circumstances to interrupt and perplex us and to make us think the service, the church service, wearisome and the time which we employ in it tedious. But as your infirmities are many and great, and the enemy of our souls is watchful to discompose us, if care is not taken by those who lead in social prayer, the exercise, which is approved by the judgment, may become a burden and an occasion of sin. Complaints of this kind are frequent, and might perhaps be easily rectified if the persons chiefly concerned were spoken to in love. But, as they are usually the last to hear of it, it may perhaps be of service to communicate a few remarks on a subject of such general concern. So what's he saying? He says, we need to pray, but there's some people who don't know how to pray too well in public, and we better correct them, because they're not going to listen if we talk to them usually. So let's correct them. First, the first topic about prayer is length. The chief fault of some good prayers is that they are too long. And not that I think we should pray by the clock and limit ourselves precisely to a certain number of minutes, but it is the better of the two that the hearers should wish the prayer had been longer than spend half or a considerable part of the time wishing it was over. This is frequently owing to an unnecessary enlargement upon every circumstance that offers, as well as to the repetition of the same things. If we've been profuse in speech in pleading for spiritual blessings, it may be best to be brief and summary in the article of intercession for others. Or if the frame of our spirits or the circumstances of affairs lead us to be more full in our statement, more profuse, in particular in laying the cases of others before the Lord, respect should be had to this intention in the former part of the prayer. There are doubtless seasons when the Lord is pleased to favor those who pray with a peculiar liberty. They speak because they feel. They have a wrestling spirit and hardly know how to leave off. When this is the case, they who join with them are seldom wearied, though the prayer should be protracted, sometimes beyond the usual limits. But I believe it sometimes happens, both in praying and in preaching, that we are apt to spin out our time to the greatest length when we have, in reality, the least to say. Long prayers should, in general, be avoided, especially where several persons are to pray successively, or else even spiritual hearers will be unable to keep up their attention. And here I would just notice an impropriety we sometimes meet with, that when a person gives expectation that he is just going to conclude his prayer, something not thought of in its proper place occurring that instant to his mind leads him, as it were, to begin again. But unless it is a matter of singular importance, it would be better omitted for that time. So the person's about to stop, and then he thinks about something else he's got to say. You've heard people like this, right? And the prayer just goes on, and people are saying, oh, I wish this was over. Number two, prayer or preaching. The prayers of some good men are more like preaching than praying. They rather express the Lord's mind to the people than the desires of the people to the Lord. Indeed, this can hardly be called prayer. It might in another place stand for a part of a good sermon, but will afford little help to those who desire to pray with their hearts. Prayer should be sententious, that is, pithy, that is, rich with meaning, rather than verbose, and made up of breathings to the Lord, either of confession, petition, or praise. It should be not only scriptural and evangelical, but experimental, that is, derived from the experience. A simple and unstudied expression of the wants and feelings of the soul. It will be so if the heart is lively and affected in the duty. It must be so if the edification of others is the point in view. Number three, formality versus familiarity in prayer. Several books have been written to assist in the gift and exercise of prayer, and many useful hints may be borrowed from them, but a too close attention to the method and transitions therein recommended gives an air of study and formality and offends against that simplicity which is so essentially necessary to a good prayer. No degree of acquired abilities can compensate for the lack of this simplicity. It is possible to learn to pray mechanically and by rule, but it is hardly possible to do so with acceptance and benefit to others. When the several parts of invocation, adoration, confession, petition, and so on follow each other in a stated order, the hearer's mind generally goes before the speaker's voice, and we can form a tolerable conjecture what is to come next. On this account, we often find that unlearned people who have had little or no help from books, or rather have not been fettered by them, can pray with an unction and savor in an unpremeditated way, while the prayers of persons of much superior abilities, perhaps even of ministers themselves, are, though accurate and regular, so dry and starched that they afford little either of pleasure or profit to a spiritual mind. The spirit of prayer is the truth and token of the spirit of adoption. The studied addresses with which some approach the throne of grace remind us of a stranger's coming to a great man's door. He knocks, and he waits, sends in his name, and goes through a course of ceremony before he gains admittance, while a child of the family uses no ceremony at all, but enters freely when he pleases, because he knows he's at home. It is true we ought always to draw near the Lord with great humiliation of spirit and a sense of our unworthiness, but this spirit is not always best expressed or promoted by a pompous enumeration of the names and titles of the God with whom we have to do, or by fixing in our minds beforehand the exact order in which we propose to arrange the several parts of our prayer. Some attention to method may be proper for the prevention of repetitions, and plain people may be a little defective in it sometimes, but this defect will not be half so tiresome and disagreeable as a studied and artificial exactness. And then there's repetition. Many, perhaps most, people who pray in public have some favorite word or expression which recurs too often in their prayers and is frequently used as a mere expletive, something to fill in, having no necessary connection with the sense of what they're speaking. The most disagreeable of these is when the name of the blessed God, with the addition of perhaps one or more epithets, a great God, glorious God, holy God, almighty God, is introduced so often and without necessity, as seems neither to indicate a due reverence in the person who uses it, nor suited to excite reverence in those who hear. I will not say that this is taking the name of God in vain in the usual sense of the phrase. It is, however, a great impropriety and should be guarded against. It would be well if they who use redundant expressions had a friend to give them a caution, as they might, with a little care, be retrenched. This might be reduced. Hardly any person can be sensible of the little peculiarities he may inadvertently adopt, unless he's told about it. So he says some people pick up habits. If you just mention it to them, maybe they'll stop. Maybe. Then there's extremes in voice and manner, number 5. There are several things likewise respecting the voice and manner of prayer, which a person may, with due care, correct in himself, and which, if generally corrected, would make meetings for prayer more pleasant than they sometimes are. These I shall mention by pairs, as the happy and agreeable way is a medium between two inconvenient extremes. First, volume. Very loud speaking is a fault when the size of the place and the number of hearers do not render it necessary. The end of speaking is to be heard, and when that end is attained, a greater elevation of the voice is frequently hurtful to the speaker, and is more likely to confuse a hearer than to fix his attention. I do not deny, but allowance must be made for constitution and the warmth of the passions, which dispose some persons to speak louder than others. Yet such would do well to restrain themselves as much as they can. It may seem indeed to indicate great earnestness, and that the heart is much affected, yet it is often but false fire. It may be thought speaking with power, but a person who is favored with the Lord's presence may pray with power in a moderate voice. And there may be very little power of the Spirit, though the voice should be heard in the street and neighborhood. And the other extreme of speaking too low is not so frequent. But if we are not heard, we might as well altogether hold our peace. It exhausts the spirits and wearies the attention to be listening for a length of time to a very low voice. Some words or sentences will be lost, which will render what is heard less intelligible and agreeable. If the speaker can be heard by the person farthest distant from him, the rest will hear, of course. And then tone. The tone of the voice is likewise to be regarded. Some have a tone in prayer, so very different from their usual way of speaking, that their nearest friends, if not accustomed to them, could hardly know them by their voice. And sometimes the tone is changed, perhaps more than once, so that if our eyes did not give us more certain information than our ears, we might think two or three persons had been speaking by turns. It is a pity that when we approve what is spoken, we should be so easily disconcerted by an awkwardness of delivery. Yet so it often is, and probably so it will be, in the present weak and imperfect state of human nature. It is more to be lamented than wondered at that sincere Christians are sometimes forced to confess, he's a good man, and his prayers, as to their substance, are spiritual and judicious, but there's something so displeasing in his manner that I am always uneasy when I hear him. Well, contrary to this, and still more offensive, is a custom that some have of talking to the Lord in prayer. Talking. It is their natural voice indeed, but it is that expression of it which they use upon the most familiar and trivial occasions. The human voice is capable of so many inflections and variations that it can adapt itself to the different sensations of our mind, as joy, sorrow, fear, or desire. If a man was pleading for his life, or expressing his thanks to the king for a pardon, common sense and decency would teach him a suitableness of manner. And anyone who could not understand his language might know by the sound of his words that he was not making a bargain or telling a story. How much more, when we speak to the King of Kings, should the consideration of his glory and our own vileness and of the important concerns we are engaged in before him impress us with an air of seriousness and reverence and prevent us from speaking to him as if he was altogether such a one as ourselves? The liberty to which we are called by the gospel does not at all encourage such a pertness and familiarity as would be unbecoming to use towards a fellow worm who was a little advanced above us in worldly dignity. Well, conclusion, I shall be glad if these hints may be of any service to those who desire to worship God in spirit and in truth, and who wish that whatever has a tendency to dampen the spirit of devotion, either in themselves or in others, might be avoided. It is a point of delicacy and difficulty to tell anyone what we wish could be altered in his manner of prayer, but it can give no just offense to ask a friend if he's read a booklet like this on this subject. Amen. And so Mr. Newton says you need to get a bunch of these and give them to certain friends of yours. I would have to agree. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I trust that you will return. And before you return, that you would take advantage of some of the things that we have on the site. 3,000 plus audios are here. There's surely something that you'll enjoy. We have persecution stories from North Korea. In English and Korean. We have the church's great preachers. We have Bible studies on a number of subjects. We have a blog here. And if you go over to YouTube and look up Pasture Lands, you'll see some things. And then you can buy one of my books at Amazon.com. A new one just came out about imminence. I do hope that you'll go looking at that one. Or you can just contact me at bob.j.faulkner.72@gmail.com, and I'll share details about our Zoom meetings. Meanwhile, thank you so much for being here, and do come back. This audio is being released on the 30th of September, 2022, and Lord willing, we will again talk real soon. Bye-bye.